In a nutshell, what do? We work with farmers, we work with landowners around Ullswater and adjacent area to show how you can have conservation, natural flood management, all in a way that works with farming. Basically, balancing act to try and juggle everything.
How did you get involved with it in the first place? What's the story?
You go back further, so you can say how you got involved in this then.
Well, I mean, we've always been interested in... So we're from farming families, and I've got some countryside management. I went to college and did countryside management a long time ago. So we've always been interested in that anyway, haven't we? And your family kind of farm, we did some tree planting and things on that, just purely because, you know, we had the opportunity to do... It's still farmed. And then it was after Storm Desmond that it kick-started things for us. So obviously Glenridging was really badly affected, and there was quite an instant reaction to sort of clear the becks out and change things, and, you know, make sure there's no trees on the side of the beck so nothing gets washed down and blocks the bridge again. And there was all that, and we were kind of like already going, hang on a minute, there's other ways we can deal with this and do this. So that's where really it started. We became like the liaison, didn't we, people to between like parish council and community flood group, to try and work with the environment agency and actually make things, started tree planting and doing upstream work then, and then it's kind of just ballooned from there, really.
Just kind of taken it when earlier on, it was always, when we first started doing this, it was all really binary, and it was either conservation or it was farming, and it was so far away from each other, wasn't it? It was like, you know, you can either farm or you can do conservation, you can't do both. And we, you know, as Maddie said, you know, we're both from long line of family farms, but yeah, we both like our conservation. So I've messed around in becks since I was a little boy. Mum told me that she first lost me when I was about 18 months down the beck, and I was messing around in there then. So, you know, I've messed around in becks forever. So it was just getting to that point where we said, well, hang on a minute, you know, if we can prove that you can do both of these things. And that's done well. It's been popular, hasn't it, that approach?
Yeah, I think it's like you say, we're from the area, so we do know most of the farmers and the communities anyway, but which obviously is a massive benefit when we're trying to make inroads into asking people, you know, can we look at this bit of land? Well, it wasn't even us, they came to us eventually, wasn't it? Originally, you know, we sort of had some very limited funding, and then after, once we'd done a little bit, and I think it's worked well, because for us, the timing, obviously, with the farm payments changing, so farmers are becoming much more aware that they have to, you know, look at other options as well for make the business sustainable. So, you know, we've sort of hit it at that time when, obviously, so having sort of plant a lot of hedges, you make wetlands, and all these things can go into longer term schemes. So that's always the aim that the work does, is that the farm can use the environmental improvements as a way of making an income as well. So that's really what we've always tried to aim it at, isn't it? So yeah, they come to us, everyone comes to us, don't they? We don't go out looking for work. So
but it's definitely, it's a responsible role, the trusted role, the responsible role. Like, anybody can plant a field up with trees, or anyone can just let a beck go over a whole field and re-wet it, but it's a challenge when you say, how can we fit that into your farm? How can we show that we can do this? We can restore these becks so they're better for fish and they're better for wildlife and they work for flooding, but how can we make them fit into your farm as well? That, I think, is that's the challenging bit. And I think you've got to understand, you've got to know the farming, and you've got to know the rivers and the ecology. And again, like Mad says, with the hedges, it's such a win-win. They just work for everybody, the hedges. We've lost thousands of miles of them. We've got so many that we can put back in, and they work so well with farming, don't they?
Mm.
And same with the rivers. If they're done in the right way, you can improve the drainage of the land as well as capacity to store water. So it's just how you look at it, really. Mm. So throughout the CIC, the Community Interest Company that we've run, we primarily try to be sort of working around Ullswater, Matterdale, that kind of area. We'll probably have about 70% of folk that we'll have done something for within that area. It's a big area, but we're also getting farmers that want us to go and work on their land outside of the area as well. We don't advertise this. It's like, you know, we're not, you know, we don't advertise what we do. This is word of mouth, and I think that's quite nice when folk are just sharing it word of mouth, and you think, well, we must be doing something half right. Mm.
Do you think it was the flood? Was it Storm
Desmond?
Desmond, that was it. Do you think that was the, like, sort of the ignition point of this getting off the ground, or do you think there was something in the background before that?
I think it was coming, wasn't it? And I think whether Desmond happened or not, you know, the changing in the farm payments and all that, you know, was just coming anyway. But I think for this area, it was definitely the catalyst, I would have said.
Yeah,
I think we'd still be quite, we wouldn't have done half as what we've done if we hadn't had a Desmond, because it wasn't just Glenridden, it was obviously people's boundaries and feel, you know, it was everything, it was all the farms felt the impact of it. So I don't know, do you think that? I think
it was
a lot further behind if that hadn't, which is sad, isn't it? But, you know, the reality.
But
it
was, something, we'd been doing this kind of work on my family's land anyways, so, you know, we knew it's possible, we've been doing it, we've been balancing all the time, because, like, we don't farm, we let our land out, so it still has to, you know, be tenanted and grazed, but do this as well. But then it's like, as Maddie says, that, like, Desmond was the catalyst without a doubt, just because it wasn't just a flood, it was so destructive in that it ripped out bridges and roads and walls and huge landslips everywhere. It was on a scale that
No one in living lifetime would have known, you know, for our area.
It was biblical, wasn't it, really? And I'm not using that lightly. It was biblical. And when they took all of the stone that washed down the becks and blocked all the becks up, and they took it out and they put it on Jenkins Field down there, there was 18,000 tonnes. So it kind of puts it into scale. Unless you saw it, it's hard to comprehend.
Is that stone washed down from the...
Yeah.
Mainly from Glenridden Beck, wasn't it? There was some from further down the valley, but
Grisdale Beck and Glenridden Beck. So what's been washing down? Because if you looked immediately after, there's huge landslips up on the way to Helvellyn. Well, and bear in mind, this has come a long, long way down. And there were boulders that would be a couple of feet across on the main road in the village that it had washed it down. You couldn't comprehend it. So, and I think that was massive, understandably. The village was cut off for quite a long time. We had no services because they were cut off because Pooley Bridge washed away and everything went through there.
So we had no phones and no water because the pump, the electricity had gone. So that over there, hadn't it? So there was no pumping. So we didn't have any water, we didn't have any phones, and no mobile signal because the thing had gone off the hotel.
And no one could get in or get out.
Yeah, no one could get in or out.
Because the lake road was about 6-7 foot deep with water, so you couldn't get out anyways. So it was, it was a pretty monstrous event.
I think it hit the vulnerability of us. It really, for the community, was like, this is just... You know, it's something you read about or see somewhere abroad, isn't it? And I know they get a lot worse sometimes, but yeah, I think we just felt really, really vulnerable, and everyone was just in shock. Mm. Like, how can this happen? You know, in this day and age, how can we be cut off for like 2 or 3 days? Literally, like, cut off. Mm. But I think from that, I was going to say, from the point of view, Desmond, obviously, people became more aware of like upstream works and natural flood management, and all that came big on board, didn't it? Because, you know, they always say that we can hold back water that will slow Carlisle flooding. And so that became a big thing that, you know, so the figures all were starting to come out, weren't they, how much water was going through Carlisle, and obviously they were flooding because, you know, it's all coming from us basically. So it was, it all just, it kind of built on that as well, didn't it? And then that's when the funding started becoming available for works, you know, natural flood management works and river works, didn't it, after that? So I think that, but again, that probably wouldn't have happened if we hadn't had a Desmond. You know, they were looking at natural flood management, weren't they, and upstream works, but it wasn't really a thing until after that for for us and for Cumbria.
So if another storm Desmond came, what do you think would be differences this time? Do you think you're better prepared as a community, or any work you've done since then will have had quite a great impact on?
In the bigger scheme of things, 10 years isn't a great deal, because it takes you a little while to get things like trees in the ground and to start to, yeah, it will have started to make a bit of difference on smaller floods, I'm sure. But when you're looking at something on Storm Desmond, to sort of get to put Desmond into sort of context, it was on what, it was like the 5th or 6th of December, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And in November, we'd had 60 inches of rain in Glenridden, so everywhere was absolutely drenched anyways. And then did we get 400 mil, was it about?
It was 3.8, yeah.
It was about
metres of rain in the...
It wasn't 3.8 metres, it was about 380 mil, wasn't it? Was it?
380 mil, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
So it was about
380 mil. So I got me a metre in that 24 hours, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was about a foot of rain in 24 hours on top of that. So it was, it's hard to sort of...
I don't think we'll have done it, we won't have done enough, obviously, to have a massive impact in it if it happens again. But like with the floodplain reconnections, and I mean, Gold Drill Beck's obviously been done since then. So, you know, there is lots been done, but whether it would be enough still to actually have a huge impact yet, don't know really.
There's a lot more to do,
and
then there isn't the funding. It's just never funded sufficiently, because people still, time and time again, they come back and they look at, oh, we'll build a wall a bit higher, or we need a flood defence that's a bit higher and a bit higher. But Carlisle flood defence is completed to a level of Storm Desmond, so it could withstand that, but future predictions all show that, like, by 20-30 plus years, Storm Desmond will be the smaller event. It will be much bigger than that, and yet Carlisle can't get built any higher, so we've got to look at further upstream options.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the government won't fund, but we're never going to stop it, are you? But we've just got to, as you say, get more resilient to it and accept that some places are going to flood.
Mm-hmm.
Some places we want to encourage to flood, and some places we have to try and protect it, and we've just got to try and mitigate it to whatever sort of level we can, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be challenging.
Yeah.
But very, very challenging.
You can't do it on your own, can you? You've got to have
people.
No, and that's what we always say. None of these targets and none of these sort of helpful strategies that will help mitigate the flooding are going to happen just by, like, just us doing stuff, or just by, you know, say other conservation organisations doing it. We have to work with farmers, because most of the land is farmed, and if we don't try and help them to help mitigate it, it's never going to happen. You know, you literally can't do it otherwise. So it's everything, isn't it? Soil health, you know, infiltration, it's everything, it's all that, and it starts right at the basics. And unless you get that right at the, we were never going to be able to reach these targets.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, that's why we very strongly, you know, think that working with farmers is the right way to go, because you could be years down the line and nothing gets done.
Yeah.
But if you're working with them, they'll work with you. So,
do you think local people and visitors know what you're doing and understand what you're doing, or how do you make them aware of what you're doing? Because it's such amazing stuff which you are doing.
That's a really good question, isn't it? We speak for myself. We never expected what we were doing to become this, really, to get this sort of big. So we didn't do monitoring, we didn't do bass lines and all that sort of thing we've just been doing, really. We just want to do stuff, that's all. So it's hard to quantify what it is that we've done, other than you could say, well, we've planted that many trees, or we've done that many ponds and that many rivers. But social media, we use that to get that out there now.
But we're not very, well, pretty crap at putting ourselves, sorry, you probably can't miss that, but yeah, you know, we're not very good, are we?
There's room to be improved.
Yeah, because we just, but it is, and it is a balance for us, because we, you know, just us two, and then we have contractors, obviously, that do a lot of the bigger work and stuff, but, you know, you do all the designing and the project stuff, and I do all the behind the scenes stuff, and, you know, there's a limit of what we can do. As we'd love to do loads more stuff, but then it's stepping up a level and then become more than what we are, and then actually does that detract from, you know, what we're doing anyway, and will the farmers really want to get involved with another organisation? You know, there's a lot of stuff about that, isn't there? Like, it's very personal at the minute, and people know they can come to us and talk to us about anything, and like ideas and whatever, and there's no pressure, there's no expectations, it's just, this is us doing this, and so we'll see what we can do.
Can you come
you.
And have a look at this?
Yeah, that literally
generally is what it is.
It's all it is.
I'm thinking about this. Can you come and have a look at this? What do you make of that idea? Grand.
I think most other people promote us, don't they?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Other people, I mean, like James Rebanks, we're good friends with him, and you know, James Robinson that has the farm down, and he's really vocal on social media. So other people do promoters, and actually, to be fair, the community is pretty much aware of, and they are really supportive.
Mm.
They're really generally really supportive of what we do, aren't they?
Someone's promoting us, because we keep getting random farmers from all over the country getting in touch and saying, is anyone doing what you do down here, or whatever? Is anyone doing that? Oh, I'm a dairy farmer from Devon, and can I, you know, and it's like,
is there anybody doing what you do in other parts of the country?
There's a couple of, we've spoken to a couple of people, haven't we, that have been trying to get farmer groups together and do it.
I don't know, I haven't come across any.
There was that one farmer that, I can't remember, he rang us up and he said, well, he literally was doing it voluntary on his own, wasn't he? And he was trying to, do you remember that guy, and he was it Norfolk or somewhere? And he'd been just literally one man band trying to.
Oh, right.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
But literally, and he's really struggling to find like funding and, you know, all that kind of thing, because he hadn't set up a CIC or anything, had he? So, but we've hosted farmer groups from Dartmoor, Shropshire, all wanting to do exactly what we're doing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And some of, they are taking some things forward, aren't they? Shropshire group are doing some stuff, I think. But yeah, we've been lucky with the teams that we've worked with. We've always said that if we hadn't had the staff that we've known from the Environment Agency and like National Trust and Woodland Trust, if we hadn't known those people and had those relationships, it wouldn't have worked as well. And that's worked really well, and you don't get that in every area, do you? Some people don't have as proactive staff or teams that are really keen to get involved, and you know, you don't always get that.
Yeah, I think it's so important that you two as locals have been here for years and years.
Yeah, that's definitely, well,
you see that plenty, we see it plenty, and then you can see it glaring the obvious way it doesn't work, because somebody has a bright idea somewhere that they think is fantastic, so they'll put that on a map, and well, the mapping says that that's the best location to do that, so therefore let's work up this huge scheme in the background. And then when they've done all of that and then found the funding, the last part of it is then go to the farmer and then say, what do you think of this? And then they say, get stuff, that's my best field, that's not going to work. And then they think, well, he's a grumpy old bugger, isn't he? I'm not going to work with him. But you're like, we're the other way around. We build it from the ground up with the landowners and the farmers. And then if they've helped say where it's going to be and they've helped design it, they can't really complain about it at the end, because it's partly their idea. So it's working with everyone right through from the start.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it, to get them on board right from the out.
And I think conservation and river restoration stuff has that reputation, doesn't it, of that, and has done for like decades, you know. that, you know, someone's going to come and tell you what to do. So already landowners and farmers are like, sorry, you know, until you engage with me. And I think that's why this has flipped it on its head, because we're not, that's never happened with this. It's completely the other way. And I think it's hard to change that reputation, like on a national scale, because all they see in the news all the time, isn't it, you know, and it's constant, and farmers need to do this and farmers need to do that, and, you know, we're going to take 10% of land for, you know, for rewilding, and that's all they see. And it's really difficult for them to then, someone like you say is plopped in the middle of it from any of these organisations, they haven't got a clue who they are, why should they engage with them, you know, why should that be, why should they be expected just to do that? You know, you wouldn't do that in any other business or, you know, I don't think industry. It is just literally that people feel that they have a say in everything, don't they, and it's all, you know, fair enough, it is, it's, you know, the nation's land, and ultimately, isn't it, but you've got to respect who has, you know, who's been there and who's made it as it is.
Yes.
And that's what gets overlooked. They just think, oh, we can do what we want with it.
You cannot, you just can't discount that or underestimate the value of it, because as you say, however good a computer model is or something like that, you just don't know when there's going to be a curveball in it. And someone said, well, actually, when it does this, you'll tend to find that that does that. And like, oh, well, I didn't, my computer didn't say that.
Yeah, do you think, oh, well, I should listen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, it is, it's really important to value local input as well, right?
Absolutely.
Right at the start.
Yeah. What sort of impact has that had, A, the flooding, had or sort of climate change in general on the sort of ecological systems within the rivers and becks?
Yeah, yeah, there's been a lot in, there's definitely been a lot in mine. So, our little, the little beck that, that runs through where I was brought up at Penruddock, runs into Dacre Beck, Eamont and the Eden, and it's really sad. I mean, I've seen it. I used to go fishing. I've always loved messing about in becks all my life. I've always just played about in them. I've always been fishing, and I can remember that beck being just full of trout and young salmon. And it just fascinated me all my life. I've loved it. I used to, you took it for granted almost that you would go down to the beck with your fishing rod and you would catch a trout because there were just so many there. It was never, you know, doubted. And because of that as well, I've always probably since I was about 10 year old and understood how the sort of salmon cycles work. That I used to watch the salmon run upstream because they come up to spawn in autumn. And again, you talk about climate change. I've seen that move back. It always used to be October half term on my birthday. That week I was off school. And that's when the salmon came up. That's when they used to run. Almost, yeah, you guarantee it. And it was fantastic. I could go down the beck and I could watch them, and in each pool there would be 10 or a dozen salmon in each pool, and these are big, big fish, and that was every single pool. And every year it's just gradually deteriorated. Every single year it's just dropped and dropped and dropped, and the time has gone further back. So now, whereas they used to run up end of October, it's now end of November, early December generally when they start moving up. I don't know whether that's got anything to do with warming change. I don't know what it is, but that is just purely my observation. But these pools where you were looking at and there would be 10 or a dozen salmon, I could go down in the last couple of years, and if you saw one or two in one pool, you'd be thinking, wow, that's really good. We are at that, we're at that cusp now where I would say it's debatable whether there are actually viable now, because there's so few of them left now, which is terrible. And when you talk to, you know, I used to talk to my granddad when he was alive, and he said that salmon, when he was a farmhand, salmon was so plentiful they got sick of eating it, and he said that's what they got given, that's what it's like, salmon again today. And he's like, oh, he's sick of salmon. And you think, well, how can we go from that to virtually extinct? They're on the endangered list now.
They used to say that, didn't they, with, you know, obviously not allowed poaching, but they would go up the becks and, like, it was an, you, just, that's what you lived on when they were, salmon were running, because there was that many, and the farms and people would just go, because that's, you know, there was that many that that's what they would do. Not, and obviously, you know, you're small scale, you're talking like a few people from a valley doing it, it's not obviously netting it or anything like that, but that's what they did, isn't it? And,
yeah.
But
yeah,
even, you know, they were probably still doing that sort of 30-40 years ago, really. But yeah, there's absolutely nothing there to do that with now. And
is that a gradual decline, or has there been a point, you know, 5 or 10 years when it's suddenly gone down? Would you think it's just been a gradual decline?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've just noticed it as just a gradual, I've noticed it as a, just a gradual decline, just year on year on year. It's just this, a gradual reduction. I mean, there's all sorts of things. It's hard to say. You know, it's hard to say exactly what the causes are. But I mean, there's, you know, there's water quality. There's overfishing at sea. There's, you know, big issue of mine is like predation, over predation now. You know, we don't have the habitats. There's far too many. You know, they're predated on far too often.
More easily.
Yeah, a lot more easily. There's just a whole plethora of reasons, and then when you look into the data as well in our job, you realise that sort of now that we've got the technology to tag salmon going to sea, and it used to be a case of sort of 15% of the young salmon that went back to sea. Of all of the young salmon that went back to sea, if 15% came back as spawning adults, that would keep a continuing cycle. Well, that 15% now has dropped to about 2, so it's kind of on the cliff edge now, really. Of, that's what I'm saying about viability. So don't
collapsing,
even know.
Collapsing, isn't it?
Pretty much. It's pretty much. I think it has pivoted beyond.
Mm.
You know, I'd definitely say we are, yeah, beyond the point now where we can get them back. So I think it's crucial that we try and make the habitat as good as we can in the freshwater to try and give them as best chance as possible to try and send as many out to sea as possible. But yeah, I took our daughter a couple of years ago to go and watch the salmon spawning, and and she's a teenage girl, and I didn't really think that that was going to be her bag. But even she was amazed. She was amazed. She was like, "Look at the size of that! That's massive!" And it was, and she was right into it. And afterwards, it was really bittersweet because I thought, I love the fact that she's seen that. Because I honestly think that, like, her kids will be gone by that point.
Mm.
They'll be extinct.
That's so sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
So sad if that happens.
Yeah.
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 What do you think we can do to help that?
On a small scale, I think we need to do as much as we can to our rivers and becks. These, like, all too often, people just look at the big rivers and think, okay, we've got to, you know, spend millions of pounds and do these and what have you. No, the salmon, they come up into the, and live and thrive and spawn in the cold upland waters. That's where we've got to really start focusing on. Like, you'd be amazed the tiny little streams that salmon get themselves up into to try and spawn. And we've got to look after these a lot more. That's what I think we really need to switch the focus around. Once the fish are big enough to start falling back down into the bigger rivers and the deeper waters, they can tend to look after themselves more in those big rivers, because generally the main rivers, the big rivers, are pretty clean now. They're not in bad condition. But I think we need to really look at these upstream spawning streams and nurseries and see them as what they are. That's the next generation of salmon that we must look after, or they'll be gone.
And there are so many of those lovely little becks, like Crowdundle, which we're focusing on, you know.
Exactly.
And people are often, in the message I get, they all want to help and do something, but it's getting exactly what, isn't it? And a coordinated effort, really.
Yeah.
Like your flooding.
it's that again. It is that. It's that again. I think there are about 400 kilometres of water course on the Eden.
Wow.
So there's a lot to go at. And I mean, yes, it'd be fantastic if the government decided that this was actually a serious thing and that they were going to put serious funding into it, then we could upscale massively, couldn't we? As it is, it's very funding's very limited for certain sort of protected for SSSIs and SSEs, and it's just very challenging to get that. I just but unfortunately that's what it's going to cost, a lot of money to restore these things. I know I've been obsessed with Becks all my life, so anything remotely close to Dacre Beck, I'll have traipsed up and down that Beck from the top to the bottom multiple times. Everything, all the little trips, all of that, I have spent however you want to describe it, my youth ratching in Becks. So I know them all, which helps in the job now when we're trying to restore Becks, because you also know what you're really bad, don't you?
But also because you're accessing a lot of the land now because we're working with those farmers, you know, and you can just say, is your mind if I pop down to see if the salmon are up, or, you know, and that's, so that, you know, it's a bit of, you know, that's places that the public would never go because they're not, you know, there's no footpaths or whatever. So that's another benefit of it, isn't it, of working closely with the landowners and the farmers, because then you can monitor these things, can't you, and you can see. But they used to come up into Martindale and everywhere, which is a big valley. And I don't think there's hardly seen. We see trout, don't we? But it's just changed massively where you can see. My son farms in Scotland, and we see more. He has a beck that runs through, and that's where we see them. And that's where you see the most, isn't it? It's sad to see, because it's lovely, like it can be full, and you see them jumping up the waterfalls and everything, and then you come here, and it's, which I don't know, is a different set of problems, isn't it? I think because they're a different side, you know, their river comes in a different from a sea and stuff, but you know, we want to get back to that, don't we, really?
It's amazing to think that when if you're looking at a little stream that's sort of from here to 5 foot across, and then you see a salmon that's two salmon that are this big, like nearly 3 foot, spawning side by side in it, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's amazing.
Yeah, they're huge, aren't they?
But they, it's those old stories, really, that like, you know, and I can recall back in my own mind and thinking, well, that was really good. That was, you know, that there was a lot then. But then I would talk to my granddad, and then he would say that was on a scale, another scale again. And he would say, like,
it wasn't anything thingy for them, was it?
He said it was just, you know, at that time of year, the Beck was full of them. He said there was places where you couldn't even walk across the Beck without standing on one because they were so prolific. And I just think, how have we got to this? It's shocking. It's really bad.
That's two generations as well, if you're saying
Yeah.
And last year we had we did a planting group with some Outward Bound kids, so we got them to come and help us plant up a shelter bed next to a river. And you knew there was sort of salmon in there, and there was some of them saw them, didn't you? You saw them. Some of them saw them in the water, but there was a dead one that obviously an otter had. You pulled it up to show them, and they were just like, what is that? As if it was something out of Jaws or something, wasn't it? They couldn't believe it, you know. And it's a big beck, but it's not that big, is it? And it's just,
they were blown away by it, because they thought that salmon came out of a tin,
didn't they? This is their absolute no idea. They couldn't believe that this is a salmon, and the size of it and everything, was it? It was really good. It was really good. That was a really good moment, but also a bit of a realization of, oh my God, how many people know nothing about any of this, you know? And it's education.
If you don't have the education, you don't have the connection, then you don't know what you're looking after, do you? You don't know what you're preserving.
I
think it's the education is going to be a huge part of it, but
if you had a vision, and what in 5-10 years time would you like to see happening?
What do you want to see? What's yours?
I would like to see no or very little sewerage in them. That's the big issue for me, because lots of other things get blamed on actually what is generally failing sewage systems. So I'd like to see that definitely sorted out. And I think that's had a massive impact on the biology and the ecosystems, and it's gone on, it's gone sort of under the radar, hasn't it, for so long. So for me, that's one of the biggest things. I know we can, well, we can influence it by actually putting pressure on them to do that, but for me, that's that, and actually just looking at how precious some of these areas are. So even just people pressure as well, and acknowledging that people pressure have a huge impact on our rivers and our water bodies like the lake and the habitats around it. And I don't know whether we're ever going to get lower numbers, we're probably not, but we need to learn to look after what we've got and manage it and make sure that we don't lose any more than what we've already lost. And I just think, I mean, that's a big, it's a big ask, but I just, for me, from that point of view of our bodies of water that we have around us, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And obviously improving fish numbers and all the rest of it, but you'll
but I just think that yeah, it's right though, isn't it? There's multiple issues with it, and I think we kind of, a lot of them need to stop siloing them, don't we, and just saying, well, it's either that or it's that or it's that. We've got a model here that works around here that balances you. That's, yeah, that is, it's trying to find that balance of everything, isn't it? You know, with the exception of putting sewage into Bexham, isn't there? You shouldn't be doing that. You just shouldn't be doing that. I'm not advocating that you do that, even in moderation. But with the rest of it, with, like, once you start restoring rivers back to natural states, then you are looking after the ecology. You are helping with the flooding. Like, if you look at the straightened rivers, if you start to add the meanders back to them, you increase the length of the river. Well, there's an increased capacity. You take down redundant flood banks that we don't need anymore. You're storing water on the floodplain, and again, the sort of sediment drops out on the floodplain. That helps the water quality. You're slowing the water down, it sort of then holds more gravel upstream, and then that gravel is what the trout and the salmon used to spawn in. So you can get a lot of multiple wins if you just apply it and just don't just think, okay, well, I'm just going to focus on that, I'm just going to focus on that. No, just think a little bit harder.
A little bit of everything, everywhere.
Yeah.
That's
what
I always say, isn't it? If someone did just a little bit everywhere, it could make a huge collective difference.
Mm.
And that's, I suppose that's what we're trying to do around here. But it would, in 10, 20, 50 years' time, have a huge impact on, you know, on the biodiversity and the, you know, the future management for flooding. But whether we...
It already, I mean, it, so it, anecdotally, because as I said, we didn't monitor anything, but anecdotally, there are rivers that we started working on 6-7 years ago where, for, and I would love to think it's a turn in the trend, but this last November just gone, I actually saw the most salmon in one of the becks that I'd ever seen before. And we have done quite a lot of work on there and try to improve the habitat, and I don't care whatever the reason is, to be honest, it wasn't like the glory days, but you know what, it was definitely an uptick from how it always has been, and I thought, that's great. If it is something that we've done, well, brilliant. If it's just a fluke, hey, I'll take it anyways, because it was lovely to see. Yeah.
On a personal level, what do you get out of that, being next to water and near water? And
oh God, how long have you got? I just love it. I love it. I'm always describe myself as a self-professed beck nerd. I just love watching them. I love seeing what's in them. I love how they react. I like to think that, you know, if I put a big stone in somewhere, then it's going to change the flow somewhere and it's going to do something else. And like when I was a little boy, I used to put stones back into becks and build things so that fish could go in them. I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I was making some habitat. And I love to see them, see how they change, see how they evolve. And then I Yeah, I do. I've just got this really encyclopedic memory of Bex, and it's properly sad. It is really nerdy, but I just love it. I love watching them, and I love seeing what's in them. And if I think, oh, well, that's looking really good, and then when you go through, you take it to the end, and then you see some fish into it, decent fish, and you think, oh, that's great. And then that's it just makes me happy that.
I think for you, it's a source of. If you were going to be thinking about it, like mindfulness, really, isn't it? It's a way of you switching off, and as well, even though you don't really, you're doing it because you love it, but you're in your when you're there, you're in the moment, and and that's it,
I could just get lost. I could just wander up a beck and just get lost looking in it, and that's for me is really good for my head.
Definitely. I think the energy they give off. Quite incredible as well, isn't it? And again, you pick up on that when you're near them, and what they're doing and just naturally doing is just, it's beyond anything we can't do anything about it, can we? And it's just there, and it's, we just, I think to be next to them or be in them and not freezing, it's like, it's such a good thing to feel, feel it in your feet, isn't it? And the gravel's in your toes and all that kind of thing. It's just that grounding thing that they fetch as well, Water that's been here for millions and billions of years is running past you or, through, it's amazing, isn't it?
So worth protecting.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I think the idea, Crodundal's probably the same for the locals, isn't it? But I think we don't recognise either. Like, it gives people identity, like Ullswater. For people that have lived here or grown here, even if you've moved here, and if I think the identity of it as itself, people don't realise how much of a pull that is. It's I know it's the landscape, but actually, like my auntie was born on the side of Ullswater, and she moved to Wolverhampton or somewhere in her 20s when she got married, and she always said, the lake, I couldn't not see the lake. And I know that was just her, but I think it feels like that for a lot of people that have, isn't it? I think recognising it as more than just this water that's flowing through is, and it's the same probably with the Crodundal Beck for the farmers or people that have lived next to it forever. It's the same thing, isn't it? You can't think of never having it or not having it or not seeing it as good as it should be, but
Never leaves you, does it?
No, that's the thing, and that's physically as well as emotionally and everything, isn't it? Like you say, we're all made up of this. So I just think we don't put enough as humans. Probably I'm going a bit deep there, but I just think we don't put as much recognition into it. Actually, what it does give people, like the benefits, for that.